Hello, everybody, and welcome to Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. So today we have Connor Boyack coming in from Utah, right?
Yep.
Correct. Utah, and his websites are TuttleTwins.com, the TuttleTwins Children's Book Series, and FeardomBook.com, his book on politics and how fear as a foundation for politics. You can find both of those through landing page about.me/cboyack. You can find both those links. He's also the president and founder of Libertas Institute. And you can find the book, both books, the children's books as well as Feardom, on Facebook and Twitter. Are both of those on Twitter as well?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So you can find those there. So we're going to be talking about his upcoming, well, actually the book three already came out, Creature from Jekyll Island, about the Federal Reserve and the history of money, a little monetary system. And then of book four, which is going to come out, called Food Truck Fiasco, which is about the politics and regulations and basically about entrepreneurship, right? And about how regulations stifle productivity for the small businessman. Connor, thanks a lot for coming back on the show. I really appreciate
it. Yeah, I appreciate being here with you.
Yeah, we talked about your first two books last time, and I love what you're doing, so I really want to help you spread it to as many people as I can, because I love these books. I got all three of them so far, and I'm waiting for the fourth one. I think I'm more excited than my son.
Eagerly.
I'm more excited than my son. Yeah, he's five, so he doesn't really understand, I guess, so much.
Right. It's more the just getting into it.
Yeah, it's more the pictures for him. You know, that's where they're at. But it's just having these books around the house, you know, for them to see and pick up. I think that's, you know, an immense value in itself, right?
What's funny is when we first started this, the thinking was that we would create books that teach libertarian and capitalist type principles to the children of people who have read the original book. So our first book was based on The Law by Bastiat. So the thought was, well, all these people have read The Law, they're going to get this for their kids. And that's definitely been true. What's been interesting is a larger constituency or a larger group of readers is really like homeschool moms and others who just have never read the book individually. So the parents are getting excited and educated along the way. And it's kind of a non-threatening way, right? Like, it's hard to give one of these like books written 200 years ago to someone. It's written in English that doesn't really sound that good. It's kind of harder to digest. But when you give them a picture book that they can sit down and read with their 8-year-old, it's very non-threatening. It's very simplistic. You just get to kind of the core principles. So we've had a lot of good parents, such as yourself. I mean, you're well versed in these concepts already, but a lot of parents who are very new to this stuff that they're like, hey, I really like this. This really kind of, you know, helps me think about things in a different way or whatever. So it's been fun to see adults getting educated too, along with just the kid. That was unexpected and unplanned on our part.
Yeah, spontaneous order in action.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah, I love it. So please go into the third one, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and what that's
sure.
about.
Yeah, so I mentioned briefly the first book based on The Law by Bastiat, Proper Role of Government, What is Law, Justice, Plunder, and Everything. The second book, very briefly, is based on I, Pencil by Leonard Reed, talking about spontaneous order and markets and how is it that objects are made and all of the people and processes and everything that's involved in that and the invisible hand and so forth. Our third book, I really wanted to do one based on money. I felt growing up that I didn't really understand it. It took me a long time to grasp it. I went through a gold phase myself and more recently a Bitcoin phase and just trying to understand a lot of this stuff that isn't taught in school and most parents don't teach it, either. And so I wanted to do a book because it's so pervasive. I mean, every commercial transaction is underlined by some sort of exchange of goods or services. And of course we have the abstraction now with money where you're not actually having to barter, but you can use money. It's so central to our lives and yet kids don't understand it. So, the book is, each book that we write is based either loosely or closely on an original work. And so G. Edward Griffin wrote a book years ago about the Federal Reserve called The Creature from Jekyll Island. For those who are unaware, the Jekyll Island is the ritzy resort where some bankers and politicians secretly fled to in 1910 to concoct the idea that later, a few years later, became the Federal Reserve. So his book is this creature from Jekyll Island. And I thought the imagery of that was so interesting to do for a children's book, right? I mean, you can turn it into an actual creature, which we've done, and that becomes the bad man, the boogeyman, or whatever. And so we use that book loosely, of course. We talk in our book about the Federal Reserve, but a little bit more generalized, central banking, right? Because we want these books are being translated into different languages. They're being sent all over the world. We don't want it to be tied necessarily to something that's American. So there's a little bit of the Federal Reserve, but it's more broadly speaking, central banking. What is money? What is inflation? Why don't people barter anymore? What are the disadvantages to that? What are some of these new innovative gold products and digital currencies and things that people are getting into? And so we really wanted to expose children to the background behind money, how it came to be, and why you know, governments are able to steal people's money. And so we introduced a grandparent, the Tuttle twins' grandparents. And like many senior citizens, right, they in the story are on a fixed income, they're retired, and their savings is being eroded by this creature. And so the twins turn into, you know, detectives in a way so that they can try and figure out, well, why is grandpa's money being stolen? And what is this creature that's doing it? And it's a very relatable story. And many people have grandparents in that exact predicament. And so we've actually had really good response on this one. It was fun doing a book that is a little bit darker, a little bit edgier. It's not just, oh, we're going on a field trip to learn about how pencils are made, you know. It's like, well, who's this creature? And he's doing bad things. And how do we respond to that? How do we get him to stop? And how do we stop the bad guy? And so it was a fun to do a book that set up the nemesis and the victim. And we can kind of work through that so kids can kind of come away with a better understanding and have some excitement along the way. And so in our fourth book, we're going to be doing the same thing, kind of have a victim and a bad guy and try and explore that same interaction, because it worked really well in the third book, and we've gotten a fantastic response, including from G. Edward Griffin, the author of the original book.
That's
yeah,
great.
He's ordered like two boxfuls of these books, giving away and reselling them and everything else.
That's beautiful.
When I first pitched him on the idea, because the authors of all of our first two books are dead, and so, you know, out of respect, I wanted to get his, you know, approval or buy-in, and he thought the idea was fantastic. And so we kind of kept him in the loop, you know, all along the way. And yeah, he's a big fan, so it's been fun.
Yeah, you brought one thing to mind for me, which is, you know, you said the grandparent was the one that, you know, has the perspective to talk to kids about money, right? Because he's seen the evolution of prices over, mm-hmm. over their lifetime, right? And you would think that, you know, living for such a long time and then seeing that evolution, seeing the value of your currency go down and prices go up, that you would naturally distrust fiat currencies and you know, move more towards hard money, right? That has a better store of value over time. But that's not necessarily the case. Like, there's a lot of elderly people that still stubbornly cling to this idea that, I don't know, maybe they think it's natural. Like, that, you know, everybody has this idea, you know, we have to have 2% inflation every year. You know?
Sure,
like,
right.
It's a natural order of things, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't look at it as theft, you know? And when you try to bring up to them, like, the Federal Reserve and, you know, it's monopoly control over money. They can print at will, right? Trillions of dollars.
Absolutely.
They look at you like you're crazy.
Right. And that's I think our challenge, is because I think the propaganda has been so effective in this to help people, lead people to believe exactly what you say, that, oh, that this fringe stuff and gold isn't for me and that's silly and there's all these problems with it. I really think that's kind of by design. I mean, the government has the ability to print money. It's going to protect that very jealously. It's going to guard that authority. Well, of course they don't want people in government schools being taught that its own power is a bad thing. I mean, you know, you look at books on Federal Reserve, and if they mention it at all, it's with, you know, very passing reference of a single paragraph in the history books.
Right.
And rarely even that. You know, and so it's this mysterious thing, and people think it's part of the government, and it's just, I think it's by design, and that's unfortunate because we're up, the deck is stacked against us for trying to combat that. And you would think, yeah, when it hits people in the pocketbook, wouldn't they reconsider? Would they kind of have open mind? But propaganda is hard to overcome. I mean, here in Utah, we're trying to legalize medical marijuana right now, and just everyone who went through the DARE program when they were like 10 years old for decades, you know, that propaganda is steep, and that's hard to get people to overcome their biases and reevaluate their opinions. I think the same thing applies here, and that's, I don't know. It's a one-by-one effort. I don't know that we're going to win anyone in any big campaign just because there are many other bigger campaigns that are funded by taxpayers that are going to combat that and cast it aside as fringe. But if you can sit down with someone and relate to them and talk to them, I think that that's a much better venue to kind of convey these ideas.
Yeah, my entrance into volunteerism and Austrian economics was that book, G. Edward Griffin, and I learned a great deal, and I really enjoyed it. He told it in such an engaging and riveting way that it really stuck with me, and so since then I've really had a passion for talking to people about neutral things. Like, for example, everybody has an opinion on immigration, right? People have an opinion on taxation, right? Rich should steal, you know, the rich should be taxed, you know, they have an opinion on that. It's an emotionally charged, you know, item. But, you know, who has an opinion on monetary system? Who has an opinion on fiscal policy? Nobody cares about that. It's a neutral thing. So that's why, for me, when I meet somebody, that's one of the best things I like to do. Like, I take out a dollar bill. I think that's a great, a wonderful learning tool. You know, you just dissect a dollar bill because whoever reads what's on a dollar bill?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Federal Reserve note.
Right. What does that mean? Like, what is the Federal Reserve? That's a conversation in itself. What is a note? Right. What, you know, a contract, IOU. Right. So, why does it have a serial number? Right. you know, all these questions you can ascertain. And then I like to tell them, one thing that's a really shocker for most people is, you know, I say, how much money do you think it takes for the Treasury to physically print $1 bill and print, transport, and store, roughly it's 6 cents, right? Roughly, the last time I read it, maybe it's more, I don't know. But roughly it's 6 cents. And so I'm like, okay, now how much do you think it is to print, you know, ink and paper and transport $100 bill? You know, roughly 7 cents. Why? Because it's more ink, right? For the extra zero. And then when that hits home to them, they're like, oh my god, that's it.
There's no material difference between the two. Right. That's interesting. I carry around the $100 trillion Zimbabwe note. That's
I want to get my hands on those.
Yeah, they're like $10 on eBay. You know, they're nowhere near the value that they were originally intended to be.
Awesome.
And in fact, in the third book, as you know, you read the book. You know, we include the image there of the, and so we use that as a teaching lesson in the book. And initially, the twins are like, oh my gosh, Dad, you're rich. You're $100 trillion. And he's like, wait, no, you missed the point. Let's go back to it. And then he kind of re-explains that, you know, why it's actually meaningless. But I've used that a lot, especially when I teach homeschool classes to teenagers, to use as an object lesson and say, why is this? You know, why is this only worth $10 now? And only as a novelty. It's not worth $10, right? I mean, it's just a piece of paper, as you mentioned, but just people find it so interesting because it was this failed economic experiment, so that there's kind of a souvenir value there. I think really that the object lesson is a great route to take this, and hopefully, I mean, my goal with the Teletwins really is that imagine your effort is like mine. We're trying to educate adults, and really, we're actually not. We're trying to de-educate adults, right? We're trying to have to say, no, wait, what you learned is, you know, in school is wrong, or what your parents told you is wrong, and that's hard. Like I was just saying a minute ago, you have to overcome that, and that's very difficult to do. Imagine if we can invest in the rising generation, right? Imagine if we had a future of freedom fighters who understood the principles of liberty from a young age, who you didn't have to wait for them to be propagandized and indoctrinated by statism for 20 years, and then try and convince them and persuade them to overcome that. What if you could have just this critical mass of people? So that's kind of the goal of the Tuttle Twins. It's the long-term investment in the liberty movement. So that, I mean, imagine what 7-year-old right now who just got the Tuttle Twins for Christmas, is going to become the Ron Paul of 2045, you know, like, you don't know what the future is going to be. So that's what excites us the most, is that it's kind of this unquantifiable, fun investment in the future. We'll see what comes of it. But I think the monetary stuff is key because, as I said, I mean, no one teaches this stuff, right? And if they teach anything, they teach like the wrong stuff. And then we have to overcome it later in life. So that's kind of the goal, is to try and provide them that foundation early on so they can understand these concepts. And then as their challenge, as they hear contradictory things in the news later on, they can kind of check that against this foundation and say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't quite jive with what I've learned before. Let me now think through this. Whereas without that, they would have just been accepted it as fact, right, without being able to have any contradictory information.
Yeah, so before we go on your other book, your fourth book, I just want to say, you know, we're talking about the hyperinflation and the you know, all the zeros on the bills. If somebody says, like, the way out of our, you know, monetary crisis is to print money, then that should mean that Zimbabwe would be the richest country on the planet.
Totally.
Argentina, Colombia, Hungary in the 1950s, and Weimar Republic, Germany.
Right.
These would be the richest countries on the planet.
It's nonsensical. Or Germany, right? I mean, you got
Germany,
the traditional
right.
wheelbarrow going,
exactly.
to, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I think people are so accustomed to the status quo that, like, it's a revolutionary thing to kind of, you know, legalize competing currencies, right? I mean, that would cause a lot of instability and fluctuation as markets kind of reshift and realign. And I think really it's a fear of people being hit in the pocketbooks. They want to maintain the status quo, even if it's like a leech that's slowly sucking your blood. Yeah, better that than to amputate an arm and have to, you know, deal with some colossal change in your life,
exactly.
but then be healthy.
Exactly.
I think we're having to overcome human nature, and that's a very difficult thing to do.
Right. Or belief in authority, something like that. So,
true.
Explain your fourth book before we go.
Sure. So, The Tuttle Twins is a series of books, right? So we've got three. Fourth one will be out in March. I'd love to do about 8 to 10 by the time we're done. I mean, my goal is to come up with about 8 to 10, maybe even a dozen, and have like a boxed set, right? So like a grandma could get her kids the Tuttle Twins box set or something like that. The fourth book is one that's near and dear to my heart, my full-time gig, as you mentioned, I founded a think tank, libertarian think tank in Utah called the Libertas Institute. And we've been very successful. We've gotten a whole bunch of laws changed. It's been a wild ride and a lot of fun. And one of the things that we battled quite a bit with is disruptive technologies and innovative companies facing economic protectionism, right? So you've got the taxis, and then you've got Uber and Lyft, or you've got the hotels, and you've got Airbnb and VRBO, or you've got Zenefits with insurance, all these different, the sharing economy and all this stuff that's finding itself coming to a head, coming into conflict with government policy. And so this is something, of course, that has spanned time. Frederick Bastiat is infamously wrote the, you know, petition, Candlemaker's petition, that touches on this subject as well. And so this book will be loosely based on Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt, which is itself based on Bastiat's writings that cover the same topic. So Hazlitt kind of did a deeper dive and a thorough analysis of what Bastiat was kind of satirically explaining. And so we're going to incorporate the concepts from that book into ours. It's called The Tuttle Twins and the Food Truck Fiasco. And it's going to be a book that, as you mentioned at the outset of this episode, it's going to cover business principles. It's going to cover regulations and how they can harm the economy. It's going to cover competition and why that's a good thing. It's going to cover heavily economic protectionism and how interests who are have friends in government are able to use those relationships to punish upstart competitors. And it's also going to include a little bit of political activism. The Tuttle Twins are kind of going to get into the mix on trying to overturn some of these laws. And so in part of the book, we're going to show them kind of becoming a little bit of an activist to try and fight these protectionist laws. And introduce a couple concepts so kids can kind of learn the government process and who is it that passes, you know, these laws and what's the city council, stuff like that. But as with the three books, and I'd love, you know, your feedback on this, reading it with your 5-year-old, these are not textbooks, right? It's not like, okay, here is what a, you know, division of labor means, or here is what economic protection, like they are softly thrown in there in the context of a fun story. The kids are kind of going along for the ride, and it's an engaging story. And then we just kind of drop these nuggets along the way. We explain them, and we kind of contextualize them, and you know, a parent might kind of say, oh, well, what that means is this, and whatever. But through dialogue, we can get into it a little bit more. But we try and make this as non, We try to make it fun, basically. And so the story is going to be a very fun one. There's a little bit of humor, a little bit of sarcasm and everything. But that's the fourth book. The illustrator's working on it right now, and we're hoping to have it out on March 15th. So probably in about a month we'll open it up for pre-orders and then be able to ship hopefully in March 15th, so a couple months from now.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend today about this episode. Actually, I'm going to talk to you, and because he's the one with the food truck. And he was telling me that you know, a few of the most common complaints that people have against food trucks are like they say that they're stealing customers from you know, the brick and mortar business at the restaurants, right? And and you know, a complaint like that is just so funny, because it's like my friend who can make a taco and some soup and sell that for $12. Is he really threatening, you know, a Brazilian steakhouse, like people who want to go and dress up formally and sit down, you know, the three-course meal, like with air conditioning or with heating in the wintertime, you know?
Totally.
Is that really a threat?
Well, and it's, you know,
so funny.
It's like, chances are a person who says that has an iPhone in their pocket. And is that person going to agree that they're stealing, you know, business, or Apple's stealing their business from a landline company? I mean, it's just ridiculous. We all appreciate innovation when it's personally beneficial, and we all hate it when it threatens our way of life, you know. But that's the beauty of competition, is we can realign markets and find efficiencies and higher productivity. But then you get everyone complaining. That was the whole basis of Bastiat's Candlemaker's petition, that, you know, that they weren't liking this competition from the sun, this free and abundant resource, and we need to shut it down. And so it's hypocritical, these people who, on the one hand, love innovation and they use it and incorporate it in their daily lives, but, oh, all of a sudden, wait a minute, this innovation, you know, is undermining my, you know, stream of income, and so we can't have that. And it's just, hypocrisy. It's cognitive dissonance. And again, human nature, we're having to overcome that. And that's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah. I guess it's very attractive. And this is one of the things that's kind of wicked about government on any size, you know, federal, state, city, you know, or local, any size, because it's like a mini, it's even local, it's a mini protectionist racket, right? And it's an incentive for the businesses that are, you know, longstanding and entrenched to want to appeal to enact legislation and regulations to protect their profits, right? Without having to do so, you know, in the marketplace by offering a better product or a better service at a cheaper price. And it's one of the most underhanded ways of doing it.
Oh, yeah. There's companies. So my experience is here in Utah, where I live and work. And there are companies who consistently will just donate to the campaigns of every incumbent. It's an insurance policy. That's all it is.
Right.
Not only do they want any bad laws passed against them, but they want access if they want to pass something that's good. And good for them often means bad for their competitors. So it's predictable. It's human nature. And it's sad. But hopefully these educational efforts can kind of get out the word and help people understand that we need consistency. Like, you can't just fight, you know, innovation on one hand and support it on another.
Right.
This is something that's overall beneficial. And even if it's harmful to you, it's a net positive because it's benefiting that many more people. And so you shouldn't fight it just because, you know, you don't like it.
And another complaint he hears from, like, the local, or I think it's the legislators, where they say that because food trucks, you know, like, because food trucks are moving and they're not like a stationary building, so they can't have access to the or they can't grant access to the inspectors that inspect buildings, brick and mortar buildings. So basically they're annoyed that he's able to produce quality service and products at a lower price, and render certain government agencies obsolete and irrelevant. That's what they're.
I'd be jealous too, right? I'm having to be regulated. All you know, this guy isn't. That's natural. You know, it's. Yeah, that's frustrating. And that's not to say that a children's book is going to solve all that, but, you know, we'll see how it can benefit the overall conversation.
Yeah. So I'm really hoping that you know, that this series will take off, and you know, I'm doing my best to promote it. So
I appreciate that.
Definitely keep you, you know, keep me aware of. I mean, I get your emails, but I'll definitely be contacting you when you release the following ones.
I appreciate that very much.
Help
it. We're eager to get the word out. We're going to be at all sorts of homeschool conventions in 2016. We're doing a lot of online marketing. Frankly, the best way that word gets out for us is people who read the book, who then engage in their own marketing. Right? They share on a mommy blog or on a podcast or things like that. Our readers are our best evangelists. And so it's been fun for me as an author to have a product that a lot of people are excited by and want to share, and it's in, you know, improving their lives and having great conversations with their kids who are now learning this stuff. So yeah, very appreciative of having me on, and eager to keep continuing the book. So everyone can, the website again, real quick, is just TuttleTwins.com. We've got a package deal if you're new to this, where we've got a discount and free workbooks that you can get, if you buy the three books together. So just eager to get the word out, and thanks again.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks a lot. So if anybody wants to donate to my show, please do so. Help me out. I really want to interview more fascinating people like Connor Boyack here. And, you know, monetary encouragement is always helpful. you can do so through Bitcoin or PayPal. Links are below, as well as through Patreon. Patreon.com/peacefulanarchism is the link. Please help us out. We want to continue doing this. And with your support, it will be realized, right? Monetary support is always helpful to, if you want to see more things in the world, that's the democracy I support, is voting with your dollars, right? That's the best democracy I support. No coercion necessary.
No coercion.
Awesome. So, Connor Boyack, thanks a lot for coming on. I really appreciate it. Wonderful
thanks
conversation.
Again.
So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.